Remember, when we were going to start with the Yamuka Matra Shamayim?
244.
And Elisha is going with Israeli. It is very big. It's
244.
Okay. Help yourself. Very basic about. Thank you.
Wow. Hi. How are you, Carol?
Page 244.
Thank you.
In the tales.
Okay, I'm going. Also, Vehi v'halos Hashem eitel yehu basor ha-shamayim v'yech al yehu v'alisha min ha-yugal. This is a little foreshadowing here, alright? It sounds like Eliyahu is already going up in his chariot, right? No, it means this was the story of how Eliyahu went up in his chariot. And it's not usually, does not do things like this. It doesn't give you an introduction in the first verse of what the chapter is going to be about. It sometimes happens, this is a chapter in Sefer Shoftim that does this. Possibly say for Shmuel that this, just the Bible just tells things that they happen. It doesn't say, and this is the story of how. Why does it do it here? It's very possible that because what we're about to read is so mind-boggling, so out of the ordinary. I mean, look, there are miracles in the Bible. Splitting the Red Sea is not believable to the scientist, right? In what I'm following. No, I'm sorry, I don't know what's going on. Maybe I have to withdraw that. Okay. So, what we're about to read is more than just than the miracles of creation and stuff. I mean, there you can say, God had to save the Jewish people. There was only one way to go into the water. So what else can he do? We'll just split the water. But here, I mean, why is Eliyahu more than anyone else? Eliyahu has these plays. He's at a bris. Eliyahu is at the seder. Eliyahu gets around. He's anytime, for instance, my uncle passed away last week, and my cousins from Shiva, and they were telling me stories about their father. I mean, I never knew any of these stories. I mean, these are the big people home from the street. You see people wandering the streets, bringing them into the house. He said, one day maybe Eliyahu and Navi. You never know. But maybe just bringing people just like this off the street. Maybe they're dangerous or something. You hear stories like that. And this is what he was doing all the time. So the question is, why Eliyahu? So we can just beg the question. Malachi says, the last prophet is not said, I'm going to send my prophet Eliyahu to announce my coming in the future. Any false messiah who wanted any degree of respectability always had to have an Eliyahu. Right? Before him. Shaptai Tzvi had Nathan of Gaza as his Eliyahu. Jesus had John the Baptist, I think, as his Eliyahu.
Do they have to say any particular words?
No one can just give up today and say, here I am, I'm Mashiach. You always have to have an Eliyahu. It's someone who announces your coming. So what words?
Is that the link?
Yivashe Elonu b'saros tovos Yeshua Nehomot. So we stay in the bench. Rachamani Yishlach Lanu b'saros Eliyahu Nabi. Yivashe Elonu b'saros tovos Yeshua Nehomot. Historically speaking, the reason why Eliyahu is invited to the Seder, and why we open up the door and say things like, God, did you take your anger out on the Goyim, is because, historically speaking, the night of the Seder is always very dangerous to Jews.
Yes.
The Jews would be accused of deicide, it's around the time of Easter.
The blood of the matzahs.
That's why, if maybe some of you remember, in Yiddish, one of the words for jail was a chagadia. Did you hear that?
No.
Anyone ever heard? No one? No, my parents. No, no one? because they always say, so come on, let's finish Chagadiah before they take us to jail, you know. So they would call the jail Chagadiah.
Well, so, one of Elie Wiesel's books, he has a scene of that they're at the Seder, and they hear the noises, and they know that they're coming for them, you know. And so he referred to that kind of thing, that there was always a dangerous time.
But why would we open the door? Would they be behind
something? No, you want to open the door and look out in the street and see if there's any mischief going on. No, to protect yourself. I'll just, so Eliyahu gets invited to the Seder for that reason, protect us. And we'll tell you, pour your wrath out on us so they don't think they can't harm us. Okay? So, why is Eliyahu always at the brisk? There should be no harm to come to the baby. There's actually another reason given in Chazal. Is that you remember in Malach HaMalach when Eliyahu was alone at the mountain and he was complaining to God? He says, "They have abrogated your bris, sefer brischa. They have rejected your bris." Now the Medrash takes it literally. And he meant they rejected circumcision, not they rejected your general covenant. They rejected circumcision. The Jews aren't even circumcising their children anymore, right? Now, can you open that? You're so good at opening up. We're closing the door this time. Leave that fire just so we can get out of the room. Can you just leave that door open for a minute until we get rid of this.
Fly. Close the line.
Fly.
That could be Elio.
Okay. All right. So because Yahweh complained to Hashem that the Jews aren't circumcised, now we don't know why.
The proverbial fly in the wall.
You want
the
left?
I shouldn't. So because Eliyahu at one point accused the people of his time of not doing bris, punishment. He has to attend every bris and go up to the Shemayim and report, "God, I was mistaken. They're doing a bris. And he keeps the ledger of all the Jews who are doing bris.
You mean it was prevalent not to circumcise?
Well, as Medrash says, in Peshat, I have to tell you that when Eliyahu said they're not keeping your covenants, he meant the general covenant of the Torah. Now, in my experience, there are some Jews who have really rejected the covenant. They trade. They'll eat on Yom Kippur. They'll personally violate Shabbos. Maybe go to shul once or twice a year. But the circumcision will give. They'll give it. Even in the hospital, they'll give it. Somehow they know, especially in America, where a lot of non-Jews get Christians, but they somehow they know that there's something called a bris. Most secular Jews get bris, don't they?
Except in Russia.
Of course, Israel. I have a beautiful story to tell about that. I was at Highland Park for Oxford, and there was a man converted him about 10 years ago. Married a wonderful girl. His name is Miro, and her name was Mary. So he was a Ukrainian chick, and he was from Croatia. And when his mother found out that he converted to Judaism, she was beside herself, because she remembers that when she was a child in Yugoslavia, that the officials forced the men to pull down their pants in the street. So a circumcision, they take them right off the jail. Just, I don't want this to happen to my son. They'll do it again to the Jews, and I don't want you to have circumcision. So, Baruch Hashem, you see the way he looks, and his children are, you know, Errol Chayin. He said, "Mommy, I have a beard, I wear a yarmulke, and I wear my sister's hair out. They're going to know I'm Jewish long before they get to my bris. They worry about it." So, there's 10 years later, Baruch Hashem, I see they have a bunch of kids. So, anyway, so Eliyahu, Malach HaBris, has to attest to the fact that the Jews are still Moser Nefesh to do bris, right? That woman in the Hanukkah story who risked her life in order to circumcise her son. All of that is after Eliyahu. Eliyahu has to attest to all those things. But this is all fine and good. This is the explanation for this, is that Eliyahu went up to the Shemayim alive. The only question is, why Eliyahu? Why didn't Moshe get sent alive? Why didn't Why not David? Why not send anybody else besides Eliyahu?
But you drew last week, you drew an analogy between Moses and Eliyahu. So the death had to be some sort of mystical. We don't know where Moses is buried, and we don't know.
Certainly don't know where Eliyahu was buried, because we're about to see.
Right, so.
No, he wasn't buried.
That's right. So there's a parallel there, even if it's a little different.
Well, and then there's the story about his being Pinchas, too, so how would that fit?
Well, there's no question that Eliyahu is something special because of the way he goes up for 40 days and 40 nights and says he didn't eat for 40 days and 40 nights. I mean, you see a clear parallel to Moshe.
Yeah,
of course. In fact, that's the Haftorah of the Torah portion. Where it says that Moshe went 40 days and 40 nights without eating. That's often not read because it tends to be one of the four
Shekalim.
Special parshas.
Shekalim.
Shekalim leap year and Zohar usually in a non-leap year. Okay? Or even sometimes Parah in a non-leap year. Anyway, so you see a clear parallel. Eliyahu has already demonstrated in life the fact that he is far, far beyond the natural. Look, there are plenty of amazing miracles that take place in the Torah, but in the Tanakh, but somehow they all happen in what can be explained as some kind of natural phenomenon. But the miracle is that it happened when the prophet said it should happen. Right? The Nile turns red. It looks like blood, and it causes all the fish to die and all the frogs to leave and drink lice. And you can explain some of these things naturally. Just the miracle is that Moshe said this is what's going to happen, and then there it was right there. So here is such a phenomenally supernatural situation that we owe, and he leaves in a supernatural way. That, I would submit to you, is the source of all of these midrashim, and why Malachi. In fact, this is significant that Ibn Ezra, you've heard of Ibn Ezra? Ibn Ezra was a commentary in the 12th century, and he was extremely independent and rational. He refused any kind of foray into the supernatural or the. In fact, he was a great influence in the Rambam, the Maimonides and the Moreh Nebuchadnezzar. But the Rambam denied belief in any occult magic, Asherah, some Hazel. Ayin Hara, Shadim, all these things that the Gemara speaks about. So much time, there's no such thing, then make your own mazel. Now, the Rambam agreed that some people have psychological mazel, and simento has psychological effects. Some people say that Rosh Hashanah will have a psychological effect that will give you the probable cause to affect a good year. I think you know what I'm talking
about. The battery's still on the wall.
So that's why Ibn Ezra explains the talking donkey in Parshas Balak as not something literal, the talking snake also. So Ibn Ezra was very rational. And he explains Eliyahu's death in supernatural ways. Because he proves that he appears alive later after his death in Sefer Devarim. So he dies and he's still alive. Ibn Ezra was, Rambam scoffed at such things. But for this one individual, there it is, and they agreed to it.
The verse was so story from the
Oh, of course.
Yeah, well.
He went up in chariot
from
the.
Some, yeah, they were very early on also. But there was a time, I think it was in Galicia, there was a place where the Maskilim wanted to change the curriculum for yeshivas and put in a lot of the take up Torah education. Second science and mystery. Now, I went to school, we learned science and mystery in the afternoon, but they wanted to really expunge much of the Torah study. And they brought in there this is a very large convocation of rabbis and Muslims and others who were giving their arguments for and against. So one rabbi said that it's crazy. The Torah teaches that Bilam's donkey spoke to him. We cannot have a curriculum where our students are learning from a book that has that. So, and I think it was maybe Chaim Oizer got up very sharp. He said, I don't know why the last speaker is so amazed at a donkey talking. He himself is feminine proof. Such a thing is anyway, there are plenty of commentaries who have an equal problem with the donkey talking, and explain the way metaphorically. The fault of this maskil was in not realizing that there are 20 Jewish, good Jewish, fine Mephoshim who have a similar concern, but don't want to throw out the Torah because of it. Do you understand?
Has the rabbi heard, I'm going to tell you the relationship, that the flu vaccine is not as effective, it's only 20% effective versus 100% effective, which was proved scientifically 2 years ago to take the flu vaccine. It's 100% effective for people over 65. So much for science. Everything.
No, it's effective for the people who make the drugs.
No, that's
very.
I don't want to argue the point. What I want to say is that science is, whatever science finds is effective for like about 10 or 15 years, and then they have to review what they found.
The world is always, the world age is always changing.
Who thought of cell phones? I firmly believe that in maybe 50 years, we will be able to talk to the animals, that we will know. Science will find a way, somehow. Science is good for certain things, but the animals talk to one another. Why shouldn't we be
able to? If you spoke 2,000 years ago about a machine that will fly through the air.
Right. Exactly.
And in fact, there's a Gemara like this. Gemara says that if, in the Sefer Nedarim, that if you say, I won't eat for 3 days, so, all right, you make a neder, you make a shura. Now see if you can keep the shur, but if you say I won't sleep for 3 days, it gets malchus right away. It's impossible to go 3 days without sleeping. And then if a person says, I will get from this spot to that spot in a time where the Gemara says it's inconceivable that he can get there, he also gets malchus right away. He goes, well, maybe he has a flying camel, the Gemara says. So the Gemara says, no, we're not kosher for a flying camel. He gets malchus. So, obviously, you know, Malparia, but what can I say? I'll just conclude with one last point, and we can end up with Kansas, is that Yeshayahu says in his book, the end of his book, that when I bring you home from your final exile, it will be just like Yetzias Mitzrayim, because you will not get your feet wet. You will not have to go through water to get to Israel. Now, so in light of plane travel, that could be the only means. You won't have to go into a ship, into a boat to get to Israel. You go quickly, go right into the air. Could she always listen to that and such a thing? But you know, the Mishnah is not just koyom. But to throw out the whole Torah because something defies your logic. So that's all of this is a commentary to Eliyahu's ascent to heaven, which seems to defy our logic. It's going to defy the logic of these prophets that we're going to look at here now in the story. They're merely all Elisha. Pasuk top off in this one. Shev na po, stay here, you wait here. Ki Hashem shlochani ad Beisel. God has sent me to go to Beisel. You stay where you are. It doesn't say where they are. They went to Gilgal. So, if you look at... Gilgal is general enough. Do you see the word Judah? See the word Judah? Mm-hmm.
Right, it's A to the left
U?
Of the A.
The
yeah.
Bethel is the left of the A, yes. Take the A and this A is pointing at Bethel.
Yeah.
The D, between the U and the D is where Gilgal is.
Mm-hmm.
Which is where they are now.
Right. Right. So from Gilgal to Bethel is it's like from almost like from Yerushalayim to Hebron. It's not a small journey. They certainly got a part of the day on a donkey.
Why don't you say Gilgal in Gilgal rather than Gilgal?
Good question. It's probably something like why you call the palms and not the queen.
Here's Bethel.
Right here.
Oh, Gilgal. There's one here.
Gilgal.
Probably because the name of the city was determined by some kind of natural phenomenon. the old hills or something.
One thing they don't call it the hospital, you go hospital, you don't go into the hospital now, it's new fashion.
Was it an area of tornadoes, perhaps?
No. Gal means turnings, but we'll turn up. Okay. So he's quite a journey. He says, I'm going to get up. Remember, Elisha? Hi, Hashem, okay, Nashana. If the Lord lives by the life of your soul, in Ezekiel. You told me I'm supposed to go with you. I'm your student and your pupil. I'm going with you. Here you do, Bethel. Now, at least you might have a sense of why you're going. I don't want you to go alone. I'm your assistant. Okay. So now this is not a hidden thing. There's a prophet. They know what's going on. Okay. What has gotten around? Shh. Hush still. Not yet. Got fire. Right. Now, why are they telling this to Elisha? Because it's very clear to everybody that Elisha has been groomed to take Eliyahu's place. Eliyahu is sort of the teacher of these Nevi'im, right? And Elisha has been groomed to replace Eliyahu. Right? They're basically saying, you know that today God is taking your master from your head? What does that mean? Taking your master from your head?
Someone to teach him,
right? That's what they're saying. Right? As if to say that Eliyahu was Elisha's crown, so to say. He was on his head, and everyone knows that you are only what you are because of Eliyahu. Well, now you're on your own. You ready? Okay. So he says, I do. I also know. You're not telling me anything new. I'm as good a prophet as you are. Okay.
Yeah.
Again, he said, I also know this. Simon. Okay. Saba, would you reach four?
For the Lord has sent me to Jericho. And he said, as the Lord lives and by your life I will not meet you. And they came to Jericho.
From Gilgal to Bethel. Where's your repo?
Back in the direction of Gilgal.
Very close to Gilgal. You're coming back. He's going back and forth and out of the way. Right? You see it?
Yeah.
Now Eliyahu said, listen, you stay here in Bethel. I'm going down to Yericho. And of course Elisha's going to say, listen, I already told you about that. He says, Chai Hashem, Chai Nafshachai, Mezvekah. I'm not leaving you. You can keep testing me to see if I'll follow you, but wherever you go, I'll go. Right? Yeah, that's not supposed to take. Sharon, would you read this?
And the disciples of the prophets who were in Jericho approached Elisha and said to him, Do you know that today the Lord will take your master from you? And he said, I know it too. Be quiet.
Pesach sounds an awful lot like Pesach Gimel, right?
Right.
Yeah. Only Pesach Gimel says that they were in Beit El. Here it says they were in Yericho. Fine. But in Pesach Gimel it says Vayikstu. Here it says Vayikshu. Here it says approached, and here it says they went downstairs. They came out. Here they approached, there they came out. Should there be a difference? Should we know there's a difference?
It should have been near, really, huh?
Mm-hmm. I came right up to him.
Yeah.
Okay, I would answer the following. Beikshu means they came closer to him. Beigashe lo Yehuda. Yishonav ashupa ashkali. Yitzhak tells Yaakov, who he thinks is Kedeshav, he says, come right up to me. I want to smell you. I want to touch your face and feel it. I can't see you because I'm blind. So Beikshu means they came right up to him. Yericho was a holier city than in Beit El at this time. It's a place where prophets live. So, Yericho is the prophets come right up to him. I don't know, I can't explain it any differently. One person is very ancient, one person is very ancient. Okay, I'm just reading it closely. So, V'yema lo Eliyahu, shev na po ki Hashem shlachani hayardena. This is getting a little nonsense. V'yema chai Hashem hayna shlachani mezbeko v'kushin. This time, you look at the map, he says, I have to cross the Yarden. I have to go out to the Jordan River. So that means he's going east, through the U and the D, right? See that? Things along that stream is the Yarden, Jordan River. Okay.
Where was Moshe when, you know, we don't know where he's buried, but the general area at the time that he goes up?
Every religion has a place for it. The Arabs call it Jabal Musa. Christians call it Santa Catarina.
Mm-hmm.
We call it Har Sinai.
No, I don't mean Har Sinai. When Moshe dies, we're in relation to...
I'm sorry. I'll put you in there about where the Torah was
given. No.
Moshe died. I'm just... Har Nebo. In Argos Moab.
Har Nebo. So
I would say an excellent point that Rich is making. What is the city that Bnei Israel went to immediately upon crossing the Yarden?
Yericho.
What's the city that where Eliyahu is now, where he's saying, I'm going to die across the Yarden?
Yericho.
He is, without question, I'm going to fortunately point this out, purposely going to a place near...
Where Moshe is.
The general description of where Moshe is buried. No, to continue with that parallel. Now, Eliyahu does not have a clear sense of where he's supposed to be going. Somehow, I mean, what the reader senses is that there is a passage of Nebuah from Eliyahu to Elisha, right? And, you know, leadership is passed over. You know, it tends to be that the one who's taking it over is already clearly on a higher madrigal. We don't want people saying, I never. Who can take over after the Rebbe passed away? There's no one on earth who's like him, so we won't have a leader. You understand? It's a problem. I think it's plagued YU. That YU has not come up with a specific leader in the absence of Soloveitchik. You know, some people de facto consider to be a Shechter, but there are other Rebbeim there who disagree with him on certain things. You have Rosh Hashiva, you have set the policy. The Babish suffers from the same thing. So when you don't have one voice to take over, it's a very important point of leadership, so that when you die, everyone can see, you know what? I mean, look, in a realistic sense, all right, so the person who takes over now is not you now, but he'll be you in 20 years. You aren't you when you started. Right? You know what I'm saying? So Eliyahu is establishing for the reader, and maybe there was a sense of that there, is that he's searching for his death place. And he's not clear as to where it is. And the reader can sense Eliyahu is losing something. He's losing his depth. And, oh, but wait, this is Elisha. He's going to take over. one of the things Bnei Israel feared, that was when Moshe died, or when they feared Moshe died, when they made the Egel, right? Is Kiseh Moshe Ho'ish, Moshe the man, isn't coming down from the mountain. Right? They said, even if he does, he's just a man. So, you know, what's going to happen when he dies? Who's going to lead us? Let's make a calf that we can give to our children and their children. It's gold. We'll stay with us. It's not going to die. And this will be the medium between ourselves and God. Right? So, it's interesting. I mean, there's more an Arabian that draws a parallel on this, men felt, oh, that's it. Moshe's dead. It's all over. The women said, all right, there's Yahushua. Someone else is it, you know? So, but the parallel is that Moshe only had sons and Yahushua only had daughters. Small coincidence, but that Yahushua appealed to the women in being able to say, okay, you don't have a leader, but you don't need to have a Moshe right after Moshe immediately. Okay. So to what extent will Elisha be a good Eliyahu after Eliyahu goes? Okay. So let's see what happens there. So they keep saying where he's going. He ends up in Yericho and he crosses the Yarden to, as Richard points out, just the place where Moshe passed away. Okay? Okay.
And here see another parallel to Moshe in
Parakhet. Yeah. Well, first it says that 50 of the prophets stood from far. And as they both, meaning Eliyahu and Elisha, stood at the Yarden. Now, you know, there's just one difference is that while both Moshe's and Eliyahu's death sort of shrouded in secrecy, when Eliyahu goes, someone's with him. Right? Have you ever heard of an opinion in the Talmud that says that Yahushua of the last days took him to Torah?
That explains, the obvious question every year, right?
See. The reason why Eliyahu had read those letters, they took him, is because, assuming that the person who says, or Yehuda became Rabbi Nechemya, ascribes to the opinion that Moshe wrote down events as they happened.
How did he record his own death, right?
How could he record his own death considering the fact that he died alone? If Yehoshua went up with him, so maybe Moshe can write 5 seconds before dying, write those last few words, because Yehoshua take this down to show it, to reveal it, and write it at the end of the Torah. Moshe wrote that. Right? But Moshe didn't leave it in a bottle or give it to a bird and say, here, take it. No one knows who Moshe was. Okay? That's those last 8 took him. Right? Okay? So, when it comes to Eliyahu, he's not dying alone like that. He's going in front of something. In fact, that's part of our narrative here. Eikach Eliyahu es adarto. It's part of Ches. Eliyahu took his man,
a cloak
that someone of stature wears. Okay, a robe. Okay, so Eliyahu took his aderet, vayiglom. Now, in the drasha it says he became a golem, you know. Vayiglom, however, means he rolled it up. Okay, that's what Gilgal would just say. Oh God, he rolled it up. He rolled it up into a ball or folded it. Vayakes hamayim vechatzu hena. Vahena. And he hit the water and it split. The idea.
Do they use the same in here it says struck the water, just the same, you know, when Moses struck the rock?
Right. Same word?
Same word?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Chapter 20.
But when Yahushua split the Yarden, In his book, I don't think, I'm not sure if it's even, it says he put down the staff into the water and it split. Right? Like his mind, he's in my business. All of a sudden the water blasts out in both directions. Now, Vayechatsu Hena Bahena is a little problematic. You can say that about the Yamsuf, but you can't really say that about the Yardin. But I'll just explain it in Pashut, is that the water started to clear away in both directions. But tell me why the Yamsuf is a better example for that than the Yardin. Did you ever see the Yardin?
No.
So how is this?
No.
And in some places it's very narrow, yes. And what else?
It flows in one direction.
In Sefer Yehoshua it says that he crossed the Yardin, and the Yardin keeps flowing from here, but it would be an amazing miracle if it just hopped over, you know, and went over like 20 feet high and his limp and just kept flowing like that. People walking under that nice little breezy waterfall there. Right? You know what I'm saying? That was a huge miracle. Instead, it's not said. Now, in Nisan, the Yardin tends to be quite flowing. But if there has been a few years of drought, which we certainly wouldn't know, the Yardin can be a real wimpy river. Remember, I think one who wrote about the Yardin being the most overrated river in the world? Someone famous. Very overrated. Because after a few years of light rains, the Yardin in some places you can jump over it. Like it says in the Gemara that someone did, remember?
Well, in modern times they have thrown away so much water. There are so many places where they're siphoning water and agriculture.
Right. Well, it also depends on even the year of abundant rain. Sometimes by the right before the next rain, it tends to be very high. Right. Okay. So when it says Vayechatsu Hena Bahena, you have to see in the context of a body of water that flows. It says in Yeshua that the water kept on building and building and building, and this water kept flowing down. If you split the Yardin, then water is going to keep, water that's here at the split. So this is going to keep rushing in, and it's going to keep going down. Mm-hmm. We have a lot of drying. Now, for the Jews crossing the Yardin in Sefer Yehoshua, that has to last a long time. But for Eliyahu and Elisha, it was
sure.
A few seconds. Okay. And when as they were walking across, Eliyahu said, Elisha, you've been a good Talmud. I've been a good servant. What can I do for you? Do you have any requests of me before I go? Right. So, and all in the same passage, Elisha says what I want you to do. I want to be twice your spirit. Until he owes the action to that. Margie, can you stand here?
Of a matter he she to us, leash all in to and all to look. May it on your heel for her hang the in Ayin long he yes when he hang more.
Well, stop there. This is an important topic. And the other says you've asked a very difficult thing. Because as Rashi says, you can't give someone something you don't have. If I have the ruach, so I can see to it that you get that ruach. But if I don't have that ruach myself, what point is there to say yes? I'll give it. I'll just kiss off to you and say, yeah, okay, it's yours. Well, good advice. Right? It has to be something that I'm able to give. You can't squeeze more juice out of an orange than...
It's also an abstract thing.
You can't squeeze more juice out of an orange than the volume of the orange, right? So how can you get that from me?
No, I don't know. When you think of other things, if sometimes this person sometimes has power or...
You can't the Talmud be greater than the Rebbe? Talmud is the sum of all of his Rebbe gives him? Right? So what is Rashi telling us? You're asking a difficult thing. How can I give you something I don't have? He doesn't mean something I don't have, but everybody knows it. That there are many examples of students that are trying to their teachers. It's just that Eliyahu is trying to tell him, it's not within my power to determine how much spirit you have, it's within your power. And that's why he gives him this test. If you can see me as I leave, he gives him an arbitrary test. If he asks God if this is going to work. But if you can see me as I leave, because I know that something extremely metaphysical and mysterious is about to happen. So if you can perceive that thing, then that's a sign that you have that strength. Okay? Chazal learned from this pasuk that a person is never jealous of a student that becomes greater. Because you can take the credit for that. From whom in Tanakh do we learn that a parent is never jealous of a child who becomes greater?
Would it be David and Solomon?
Yeah, absolutely would.
I don't have much confidence.
Because when David was told, you won't build a base of this, but your son will, and it means that I'll have a son who will rule that, and that's a great feeling. But you won't do it, but your son will. And David was very exhilarated, very magnanimous to the prophet who told him this, because at first the prophet said, you can build it. You do whatever you want, God is with you. And then he had the unfortunate change of a plan in the morning when he had to tell David, you actually can't build it. Sorry, I made a mistake. You're a man of war, and it's a big business to build my hands. So, here in our pasuk, Eliyahu is not in any way enraged or hurt. Remember also parallel when Moshe was being upstaged by those two prophets. Remember the names?
Eldad and Medad.
Eldad and Medad. Right. Eldad and Medad. Prophesying the tent.
Right. It should be so that everybody.
The prophecy about Moshe dying in the desert, not coming into Israel, right? And Yeshua was very upset. Moshe claim, silence them or possibly incarcerate them. And Moshe says, "How am I? Everybody should be enough. How does one need them? They have one involved in being. Even if they say bad things in my regard, but so here too, we have a similar." Some discussion here about Elisha asking something that is beyond what Eliyahu thinks he's able to do. Well, let me give you a text.
Does Chazal criticize Elisha for having asked for this double portion at all?
No, you never find anything like it. No, I don't think we should, because what's wrong with saying, give me more of this. There's something in Tanakh, there's something in the Gemara called Tafasta Meruba Lo Tafasta. If you ask too much, you get nothing. That's what Yochanan and Zakkai didn't ask in Yerushalayim from Vespasian, remember that story? Vespasian gave him three requests. He should have asked for Yerushalayim. Of course, the Gemara says, no, he purposely didn't ask for Yerushalayim because if you ask too much, you get nothing. Tafasta Meruba Lo Tafasta. Okay. So, he said, if you see me go up, then you've got it. Right? The Mayan, lo yiya. But if you cannot see me go up, it means that you're so lacking in spirit as to not, certainly not have the double portion. But thus implying that he may be equal to Eliyahu, but only get, but still not be able to see it. The only way you can see it is if you have already manifest that which inside you could lead you to be twice as great as I am. How was Elisha twice as great as we are?
He
hasn't
come
to that.
If you look at the notes, you can cheat and get the answer.
You will spend many weeks. You will spend many weeks discussing.
It's down here. The Radak. Or wait, no, where was it?
That in terms of crowning, I think the prophet was listed over, though, again, so the other.
But I have to tell you, Elisha had more space than the Tanakh. I think he had a lot of Eliyahu's here. Elisha goes on and on and on and on. He's very popular, one of the most favorite of all the prophets. He was very beloved of the people. Of course, we don't see him rebuking them for their ill ways, but we do see him perform all sorts of miracles for everybody. As they're walking along, they see an amazing sight. A chariot with horses, and they're all made of fire. And they separated them. Eliyahu got into the chariot, into the fire. Now, what do you think Elisha saw when he was doing that?
He's going to die. But like with the burning bush, the same. It didn't consume.
You see some amazing parallel? Fire does not consume. The fire is just there. Now, fire cannot just exist, just fire. It has to have a source, it has to have a fuel source, it has to have oxygen in the air there. But what's it made of? Where's it coming from? Is it attached to a trunk or something? But Radak says something typical of Radak, because Radak was in the same school as Ebenezer, more French rationalist, the Spanish rationalist school, that the Radak also went to school in France, and he was also imbued with the more pious and more traditional literalist approach that they find in Rashi and his friends. The Radak said that as soon as Eliyahu got into the chariot, He burnt that tower. And his ashes fell down. And the chariot started to go up. Now we look down at Elisha from way up, and it starts to ascend. Right? And he notices that Elisha sees him. Okay, he started to go up in this chariot. Elisha Roeb was in the Sa'ik. So Eliyahu, there's nothing in here that you face. One way or the other in this. Just says that it doesn't say that it actually ascended for that matter, but as Eliyahu says, Vaya'al, that's the Rashmai. He went up. And then Elisha saw that he's dead.
But it doesn't say he went up in a chariot in one of the. Because he went up in a whirlwind, you know, the Sahara, right?
So the whirlwind took the fire up. The Radak says that this is what killed him.
Could it have been lightning?
His ashes came down. The Lord himself got lightning down. Remember, he brought fire down from heaven. Sacrificed up in Har-Carmel.
In a tornado,
you go the same way.
In a tornado, you have lots of lightning at times and thunderstorms.
Right, you're moving into is typical of the Spanish rationalist approach that tries to find some natural phenomenon where this would be something to notice.
So we're not supposed to
arrive in this whirlwind. Sahara means like a hurricane. So it's called Sahara.
So are we supposed to think that or not, or it's okay whatever way we think?
Whichever way you want to think, it's still possible for Eliyahu to be, making his rounds. Okay, I think let's just finish this one Indian. Okay, so Elisha screamed out, Avi, Avi, Rech of Israel, Parsha. What does that mean? Father, my father, chariot of Israel, and Hashem are charioteers. If you look at the Targum to this passage, it says, Elisha Chazi Behu Metzabach. Rabbi, Rabbi, Tav Lahom Li Yisrael, Yitzluse Yosifim Farshim. Wow. He says, my father, father, you are better for Israel in his battles than chariots and soldiers. Gosh. And he didn't see him anymore. And then Elisha, now, did Elisha know if this qualifies as seeing him go up? Mechura does. He feels very bad about losing his rebbe, and he cuts kriya for it. But like time when David found out that Shaul died and tore his clothes for it, it was also good news for David.
He's inheriting the crown.
I'm in charge now. So too, Elisha has this good news for him. Taking over someone as great as Eliyahu, more mine. It's just out of nowhere, he comes up to me and asks me to come along with him. Someone must be told to choose me. And here, now I'm taking over. That's, you know, scary news. It might be daunting, but he immediately is up to the task. And he picked up the robe that Eliyahu threw down, Asher Naflomi Alav. There shall be a mod of Spasiya. Came to stand at the edge of the Aryan. Okay, we'll continue, I think, next week.
Next week, will we have class? Arab
Rosh Hashanah, the 10th Monday? Mm-hmm.
Rabbi, how do you say it's the same
as... You can look it up. I think Sa'ara is what I would say if not, if I didn't have a chance to look it up. I'm not being able to work that for you. Rosh Hashanah is a hurricane.
So our next class will be 2 weeks.
2 weeks, Dave. No, paper, I think, is Thursday.